Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hello and welcome to the Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else podcast. I'm Tiara Costin, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Calvin Mackey, who is one of the nation's most prolific young STEM and educational motivational speakers and leaders. He is an award-winning mentor and internationally renowned motivational speaker and a successful entrepreneur. His message as a mentor, speaker, entrepreneur, and former engineer professor continues to motivate and inspire people to achieve their lifelong dreams through education in general and STEM specifically. Operating under the premise that exposure and experience are two important parameters of success, Dr. Mackey founded STEMNOLA, an organization whose purpose is to expose, inspire, and engage members in the New Orleans and the surrounding communities about the opportunities in science, technology, engineering, and math. STEMNOLA designs and delivers activities, programs, and events that bring inspiration, motivation, and training to all STEM stakeholders, specifically focused on underserved communities. Dr. Mackey, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Costa.
So, my first question is obviously, why your passion for STEM education?
Why my passion for STEM education? STEM has transformed my life. My father was a roofer. Growing up as a kid in New Orleans, I always worked with my dad. So I always wanted to impress my dad. He had an 8th grade education. So he used to always call out, you know, what's a half and 3/4? And I had to give him an answer real quickly. I used to always build stuff. So when I was in like middle school, I took drafting and woodwork. And when I got to high school, again, I took drafting. And when I got to college, when I started college, they said I was reading on about an 8th grade level. Based on test scores, but my math scores was through the roof. So they said, what are you going to major in? I said, mathematics. What else would I major in? You know, I love numbers. But after 3.5 years in math, all the numbers disappeared and I was back to words. That made my head hurt. So I said, I'm going to get another major in engineering. So I left Morehouse and went to Georgia Tech and got a second undergraduate degree. In 5 years, I got a BS in math from Morehouse and a BS in mechanical engineering from Georgia Tech. So literally, while working at Georgia Tech on my BS degree, I just met people who looked like me, you know, who was doing research. And Dr. Carolyn Myers, now president of Jackson State, pulled me into a lab. And about 6.5 years later, I had a PhD in mechanical engineering. Then I was a professor at Tulane for 12 years in mechanical engineering. But it was always my ability to do science and math that brought me joy, that kept me safe, that got me out of trouble when I was in school. And so I know if it did that for me, there are many other kids in our community that it would do the same for them.
Okay, so clearly from that direction in comes STEMNOLA.
Yes.
So how did that come into being? How was that born?
As I said previously, I was a professor at Tulane for 12 years. And one thing that really stuck in my craw as a professor was that I just didn't see professors with the ability to do outreach, professors who wanted to do outreach. And even if they wanted to do outreach, they didn't possess the skills to reach students where they were. So even at Tulane, outreach for Tulane was down the street at Newman. That ain't outreach, that's visiting your kids. And even at places like Xavier or Morehouse, when we do outreach, a lot of times we outreach into kids who otherwise going to get it anyway. We go to, a lot of professors go to where they're comfortable. So if they're black professors, they go to black middle class kids. If they're white professors, they go to white middle class, upper class kids. So the question became, who are reaching the kids who otherwise would never get this? So what I wanted to do was develop a platform of mechanisms to reach out to the entire community. And there's three basic hurdles that I identified over the years that we had to overcome to reach these underserved communities. And these three basic hurdles was the reason why institutions, regardless of their demographics or regardless of their ethnicity, or regardless of their missions, didn't do this type of work. And the three hurdles they had to overcome was one of access. Many of our institutions fail in outreach and fail to reach the underserved communities because they do what's comfortable to them, and they have events on their campus. You know, especially STEM professors, come to us. Come here and you can do this. Well, you know what? Our people ain't coming. The underserved community, they're not coming. The people who are going to come are the people who got the ability to come. Ta-da! And those are the people that we continue to give the same stuff to. So if we're going to reach the underserved community, first and foremost, we got to go to the underserved community. Access was number one. Second thing is affordability. A lot of times, you know, STEM is cost prohibitive for a lot of people. So you're going to have a camp and charge $100. If you're going to have these things and charge and charge and charge, the only people who can afford it are the people who are going to get it anyway, the middle class people. So therefore, in our program, we raise money, and we've come up with a pathway for people who otherwise can't pay. If you go to school for free or reduced lunch, all of our programming is free for you. If you don't go to school for free or reduced lunch, there's a charge for you. I believe those who can pay must pay for those who can't. People ask me, you know, if you were to come in and get a sponsor and a sponsor pay for everybody, would you ever have a program with everybody free? And I said, never. I'd rather have a program that's 100% free and reduced lunch kids who are financially challenged than a program with a bunch of middle-class kids who otherwise can pay for it. I mean, you know, at some point we got to start delineating who gets this and what's the cost for them getting. If you can pay for it, you should pay for it, because then that give us revenue where we can create more and bigger and better things such that everybody else have access. And the third barrier you have to overcome is that of expertise. I got a PhD in engineering. My wife is a pharmacist. We volunteer at my kid's school all the time. But guess what? My kid's school got other doctors, got other pharmacists, got other engineers. A lot of underserved kids don't go to schools where parents are engineers and doctors. So therefore, I got to use myself and I got to use my connections to marshal that expertise to where these kids are. So one, we have the programming where the kids are. Two, create the pathway of affordability. And three, we marshal the expertise to the kids. And in 2.5 years, we've engaged over 5,000 kids. The same kids that many people say don't want this, the same kids that institutions say it's just a waste of time to go to them. What we've proven is that we've proven our premise that really a lot of people just don't have the skills to reach these kids where they are. And if you reach them where they are, they'll respond. And that really was the impetus of STEM Nova. When I was a professor at Tulane, I went to Creature Center of Outreach. Literally, I offered my salary back up. I said, you take my salary, and that lady over there, that guy over there, they're really good researchers. Divide it up with them. Let me start a center of outreach, and you put me on soft money. Meaning, every grant to go out the door, the center of outreach would be a line item in that grant. And we'll do the outreach. We'll do the outreach for all these people otherwise don't want to do it, all these people who want to do it and don't have the skills, certain amount of money from their grant, come to this center, pay my salary, pay my staff, and we go out and do the work that these people don't want to do. I believe we're doing a disservice by putting people in front of our kids who don't want to be there. So a lot of National Science Foundation grants, every National Science Foundation grant has broader outreach in it. So that means that if you write a National Science Foundation grant, they're going to give you money. If you win, you're going to get money to go do outreach. And I'm convinced a whole lot of people don't need to be in front of our children.
Okay. So you did this off of a university campus?
No, I didn't do it off of a university's campus. I was on sabbatical in 0405, and I put the whole idea together at the University of Michigan. When I came back to Tulane, I offered it up to Tulane, and Tulane said no. As a matter of fact, not only did they say no in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, they decided to keep the football team, eliminate the engineering program. So I lost my tenured position. So instead of going back into academia, I decided to create my own center of outreach, my own center of STEM outreach as a nonprofit.
Okay, so I have had the privilege of attending, being a part of a couple of your STEM NOLA events, and I am seeing children who are tiny. Mm-hmm. I am seeing 5, 6, 7-year-olds. But when I look on college campuses, I still see people who are about to go into young adulthood who still have not had the access that they need to maximize their mm-hmm. success. Mm-hmm. So how do we connect the two? We're having this conversation right here on Xavier's campus. How do we connect you touching those very, very young students and having students who are prepared once they walk onto a university campus? It's like, I know what's out there. Mm-hmm. I know what I want.
is very interesting. I use a sports analogy. LeBron James is on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the 10th grade. That means they didn't give him basketball in the 9th grade. Leonard Fournette, the star running back at LSU, in the 6th and 7th grade, they said already he was going pro. That means he didn't pick up a football in the 5th grade. So therefore, the NFL and the NBA never had workforce issues. The NFL and the NBA, tonight is the NCAA championship. Those colleges, you know, there's 2,400 four-year granting colleges. There's, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 two-year colleges. Those colleges never have a problem finding black boys to play football or play basketball. They will scour the earth. They'll go to West Virginia. They'll go on the rocks. And they still find a brother that can't read that well, can't write that well, but can jump like a kangaroo, strong as an ox. And they say, you know what? We have a place for you on our campus. But many of our young kids who want to be doctors, want to be engineers, who are struggling in school, they're not willing to do for them what they're otherwise willing to do for that black boy who can run and jump high. So therefore, if we're going to use the sports analogy, just like they put the golf club in Tiger hand when he was 3, when they put the tennis racket in Serena and Venus hand when they was 3 and 4, when they put that football in Leonard Fournette hands when he was 2, when they put that basketball in LeBron James hand when he was 2 and 3, we got to put STEM in our kids' hands starting pretty much from birth. So therefore, if we got a million kids playing football every Saturday dreaming that 15 years later they're going to be one of the 260 that get drafted and become millionaires, if we got a million boys playing basketball every Saturday believing that 15 years from then they're going to become drafted, they become one of the 60 that get drafted and become millionaires, we got to put STEM in the hands of a million kids every Saturday, having them dreaming that 15, 18, 20 years later they're going to be one of 14 million millionaires and one of 1,865 billionaires. That's how we change this thing around. We can't pick and choose who's the STEM genius. We got to expose all of our kids. So in STEM NOLA, we don't pick and choose. We don't do middle school. We don't do high school. We don't do K through second. We do K through 12. We do the entire pipeline. So right now, you know, we're talking about underserved communities, but I'm meeting middle class people who don't know what STEM is. Forget the kids. We got middle-class parents who don't understand this thing called STEM or the possibility or the pathways what their kids need to take to get where they need to go. So therefore, STEM NOLA's mission is to expose, inspire, and engage the entire community in STEM awareness. We got to engage the parents, the grandparents, the politicians, teachers, the guy on the corner, and every K-12 kid. So you don't even hear education nowhere in my mission statement. Is expose, inspire, engage. And when you see these little babies, our little K-2 babies building stuff with their hands, they leave out of there believing that, hey, one day I'm going to be a scientist, one day I'm going to be an engineer. I could be like Dr. Mackey. And that's where it starts, with a belief and a hope that I can do this. And you don't know where that's going to turn out. But I never want a kid to walk up on Xavier's campus and never heard of STEM. I never heard of science. I never heard of engineering. I walk up on Xavier campus believing that they cannot do that. And that's what's happening now. Our kids are turned off to STEM early on because they haven't been exposed to it. So for the first time now in the city of New Orleans, we got little poor black kids showing up to school, having experienced something before they get introduced to it at school. And teachers are writing letters saying, you know, they're more confident. I mean, they're raising their hands. The little boy is jumping out the chair like, ooh, 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 I know this. Instead of being a kid in the corner, that's the problem. Now he's the one that's teaching the class. That's how we change this thing around. We got to expose everybody.
Okay, so we are starting young. What do you hope to accomplish here in the partnership on Xavier's campus?
I'm on Xavier's campus. And past president, Dr. Norman Francis, saw what I was doing, called me to his office. I'll never forget the day, December 27, 2013. And he said, I want you on this campus. And I was like, nope, I don't want to be on a college campus. I mean, I'm just critical of college campuses and outreach. I don't get caught up in a bureaucracy. Nope. But if anybody knows Dr. Francis, I ended up on the campus. I ended up on the campus. And he was like, no, I want you on this campus. You need to be on a campus. He said, you've been able to do that, which I have not been able to do for 47 years. And I said, what's that, Doc? He said, get these people off the campus and get them in the community. That's what I want. I want to serve as a service provider. I don't want to displace any professor. We want to bring to bear the expertise to the professors at Xavier, at Tulane, at Loyola, to the professors across the country to help them get the knowledge that we know they have, they know they have, into the community, to people who otherwise can digest it. I'm critical of the professors because I need them to realize that they don't know how to reach the community. And that's not a bad thing. You haven't been trained in that.
Right.
That's the solution we bring to you. We're just trying to create a platform so these professors can just show up and do what they do. A lot of times outreach fail because you've written a grant. They want you to go into a community you're not even familiar with or go into a classroom you're not used to dealing with little third graders. But what we do for a professor at Xavier, for a department at Xavier, we've done it for the chemistry department, we've done it for the mathematics department. We'll go and set it up. And the only thing they have to do is show up and do what they do. And I believe that is the answer. I believe the professors have the knowledge. I believe their intentions are good. I believe there's a gap in the skill set. We're not trained as professors to engage community. That's not who we are. That's not who we do. And that's why we are very parochial and like, come to me. If the kid come to the professor in a lab or something, they could deal with him. But you take that professor and put him somewhere else, I mean, it's a very uncomfortable situation. So we make it a very comfortable situation. It can be very intimidating standing before fourth graders. We go in and we set it up, and a professor come in, and she does what she does. STEM is too big for one person. We ask professors, if there's something that you're doing that you want to get to kids, we'll work with you to help shape it such that it's not way over the head. Because a lot of times we're in a classroom with college students and we're professors, we've forgotten where kids are in a second grade, where they are in the third grade, where they are in the sixth grade. A lot of times professors come to me and I go, nope, that ain't going to do it. That ain't going to do it. One of my buddies, he's a dean of engineering at UC Irvine, and he and I argue all the time. And the way I got him to see it was, I said, man, look, he built this robot. He wanted me to take the robot and introduce it to the kids. I said, okay. I looked at the robot and said, it's not going to work. He said, oh, man, I had 300 kids this summer. I said, you had 300 middle-class kids that you all otherwise trying to keep in a pipeline that did this. I said, what type of car you drive? He's like, oh, you know, I drive a hybrid. I said, no, what type of car your wife drive? He said, you drive a BMW. I said, what model? He said, like a 5 series. I said, there's some higher series. Yeah, 6 series. There's an 8 series. I said, is there a lower series? He said, of course. I said, what's the lowest series? He said, a 1 series. I said, that's what I need. See this robot you built? That's a 6 series robot. And these kids don't know how to drive. I need a 1 series robot so we can teach them how to drive. Then they can work their way up to the 6 series. But the fact that he had been in the academy 25 years, that's the gap. My 2 brilliant kids, his 2 brilliant kids, what I'm giving my 2 brilliant kids, I can't take that and then say every other kid is at that level. Because they playing PhD at home. Their dad is Dr. Mackey. Of course they can do that. They should be able to do that. They should be able to do more. But for the kids who are not playing PhD at home, I got to go back and I got to give them something at a lower stage and bring them up to where they need to be. So that's what we want to do for the faculty members. We want to be their partners and be service providers and help them get their knowledge to the community.
Okay, great. So I have a 2-part question. First, this is Dr. Mackey's world and he can have anything he wants. What do you want to see from Xavier's faculty as far as that partnership? What would you like to see coming to STEM NOLA from them?
What I like to see from Xavier faculty is a desire. I like for STEM NOLA to be written in every grant that goes out the door. I sit down with the faculty members and tell them how we can help them, show them how we can help them. STEM is too big for one person. I mean, every faculty member here has some expertise in some, let's say, scientific, technical area that really our kids need to be introduced to. We'd like to sit down with those professors and say, hey, put us in a grant, you get the grant, and this is what we'll deliver for you. STEM NOLA name doesn't have to be anywhere on it. We'll deliver their data. We give them whatever they need, whatever outcomes they need. We'll deliver their outcomes, bring them back to them. They write their papers. They get published. They do whatever they need to do. We can jointly publish or whatever. And I know their challenges. I was a professor. And that's the thing. It's not like I'm some teacher or something. I was a tenured faculty member for 12 years at Tulane, did a sabbatical at the University of Michigan. I published over 30, 40 conference and journal articles. So I know their struggles. So this is something that we could take off of their lap, free them up, and do this for them, and then give them the data. They participate at the level in which they want to or not want to. And now they satisfy their grant. We get to satisfy what we need to satisfy. We've engaged over 300 Xavier kids in the community, and we give them stipends. So I mean, we got kids coming from LSU, Southern, every institution in the city of New Orleans. We've had college kids engaged with us working in the community. So this is a way now. Literally, we've created a STEM ecosystem where we're engaging everybody. We're engaging the parents. We're engaging STEM professionals. We're engaging college kids. The people missing of the professors here at Xavier.
Understood. So now I'm going to make our world just a little bit bigger, and this will mm-hmm. be my final question. We've talked about the Xavier community. What about that person, that group, who wants to sort of repeat what you've been doing here in the New Orleans community? Maybe it's out in Oregon and they're trying to serve the mm-hmm. Native community. Yep. Or maybe out in mm-hmm. California and they're trying to serve the Hispanic community. What do they do? How do mm-hmm. they replicate what you've done?
Dr. Colston, we believe that we've created a model that's scalable, transferable, and reproducible. And the last part is that we're trying to make it sustainable. That's where the part come in, where now we're in Ari Xavier's grant. Now, we don't have to ask anybody for money, because now we are sustainable. If we have revenues coming in, we can continuously give to the community. Right now, this model is being replicated in Billings, Montana. I'm headed to Denver on April 14th, 15th, because they'll be replicating the model in Denver, not only in Denver, Colorado, but across the state of Colorado. I'm headed to Jackson, Mississippi tomorrow. By the end of the summer, we would have created STEM Jackson to engage the entire Jackson community. And we just left a meeting in D.C. because we're trying to create STEM D.C. So the bottom line is that we built a model that's scalable, transferable, and reproducible. What needs to happen if someone wants it in their community, they need to contact us, and we need to sit down and work through the particulars on just how it's going to happen. Because we build modules. We built 20 different modules based on different standards that's transpiring in schools. So therefore, not only will we almost give you the model, but now we've created the modules that you can purchase from us to fit on the platform to keep the thing going. Now, like in Billings, they came down, they flew me out to Billings. They had me speak to their business community. They had me speak to every teacher in the city of Billings, Montana. And then they decided, well, we're going to do what Dr. Mackey did. And this is what I tell people, don't do. So what they did is that they saw what I was doing, and then they took the bad stuff out of the classroom and just put it on a larger scale and called it STEM Saturday. No, we have a secret sauce. We have a way of reaching a community. We have a way of keeping these kids engaged. And our program is diverse. It's diverse from a race standpoint, from a ethnicity standpoint, from a socioeconomic standpoint. You know, we got rich, wealthy, middle class, white, black, Hispanic, and even Vietnamese people coming to the inner city to do STEM. And the reason why they're coming, because I believe that if you build a quality program, they will come. Usually we take the quality and put out there where they are, instead of taking the quality and putting it where people otherwise can't afford it is. That's how we're going to flip this thing upside down. I say, we're going to go where the poor people are, put quality there, and then force everybody else to come. And that's that. And we've delineated that. We've documented. We have an entire booklet on how to do it. May 12th, I'll be the keynote speaker at the National Boys and Girls Club of America. They're trying to put STEM in out of school time, and we've done it. We've done it. They're trying to raise $40 million to do it. I said, I've done it with nothing. I'll make it an even number. Give me $15 million of that $40 million, and I can tell you how to put it in every last one of your facilities. Because in New Orleans, we do the STEM in the recreation facilities. In New Orleans right now, we have more kids showing up at recreation facilities for STEM than for individual sports. The city now requires to have 2 police at every event, not because of crime, not because of people feeling safe, but because of crowd control. anywhere from 150 to 200 kids show up. Let's say that's 100 parents. That's 300 kids and parents coming to one place. We have anywhere from 50 to 100 volunteers. So literally on a Saturday morning, we have 400 people showing up to a gym for STEM. Literally, we are locking down streets on Saturday morning. And we've shown that it can be replicated. We've done a one-off event in Denver with 400 Black, Hispanic, and Native American kids. That was absolutely amazing. We did 2,400 kids in Milwaukee. We did 200 kids in Charleston, South Carolina at the Democratic debate. So people are finding out about it. And we have a client now that's taking us around the country. They have these big STEM events based on what we're doing in New Orleans, wherever they go. So we're ready.
And we have been talking to Dr. Calvin Mackey, founder of STEMNOLA, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.